Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jose Vieira from Disability Rights Promotion International. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with Disability Rights Promotion.
Okay, so Disability Rights Promotion International, after almost 14 years of developing these activities, we have now launched an online platform in order to train people around the globe in disability rights. That means that anyone from any part of the world will be able to get on the platform and be trained in our methodology, in our disability rights methodology. That, of course, allows us to have more people trained, and, of course, it helps us to have a broader DRCI project. So that's, I would say, the most recent and most important update. However, we have also developed 4 regional training, one in Africa, one in Eastern Europe, one in Latin America, and one in the Asia-Pacific area, not only to test the platform, but also to train some regional leaders in this monitoring methodology. So I would say that those 2 things are the most important updates in terms of the RPI. However, what is next for us is trying to obtain sources, basically, to keep working as a DRPI, but also to kind of start a more close relationship with different partners around the globe to let anyone get on the platform and learn our methodology and actually launch what we call a national project, which basically is a reporting process where all the speech rights are analyzed and monitored.
So, are there any challenges in this work?
Well, you know, there are a lot of challenges around this work. First of all, is that, as you know, we are still under a context where disability rights are not very well developed and are not very part of the daily life of persons with disability. So I would say that the first and most important challenge was to kind of break down with this stereotype of people with disability not being able to monitor their own rights. So I would say that that was one of the biggest challenges that we have been facing. And, of course, some other technical issues such as language barriers, access to internet. But, challenges are always good opportunities to learn more and to try to develop new activities.
So, on the other hand, has there been any recent success that stood out for you?
Yeah. We have very good successes, especially in creating networks. I think after DRPI training take place, the most relevant outcome is that regional networks start to be built. And that's such an important tool for us to make sure that DRPI will last for many years.
So, what are the next steps for DRPI?
Well, our next step now is basically to finalize the platform with some input that we have had from the training, and then try to make it as accessible as possible and try to reach more people out there. You know that the big objective, the most important goal of the RPI is empowering people through monitoring their own rights, basically to become more active and to be more included in the society. So our next steps are basically putting our platform available for as many people as possible.
So, how does the community respond to the work of DRPI?
Sorry, repeat the question. I see you're very, very low. I'm so sorry.
So, how does the community respond to this work?
Well, the response, if I'm not getting you wrong, I think you are asking me about the response of people around the DRPI work. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, basically, the response is very good. They always like what we do. They always think that what we are doing is quite important. So we always have a good response, actually. They also demand the continuation of the RPI and to keep working for their own rights.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Jose had been on once before talking about some of the more preliminary steps of getting the platform ready. Fact is, in disability rights monitoring, it has to be standardized. It has to be something that everyone can relate to and access. No one can speak better to what a person with a disability needs than a person with a disability. Partnerships and collaborations are really the key to making projects such as this one a success. I think Jose had exactly the right idea, as do other representatives of Disability Rights Promotion International. The key is coming up with a universal model, something that's accessible and understood by everyone. The understanding of a person with a disability's rights is key to their functioning in society. If a person knows their rights, they can act upon it. But gathering information is critical. DRPI has been doing this in different parts of the world for several years. The fact is, some remarkable people are tied to this organization. Some of the greatest guests I've had the privilege of interviewing have been representatives of their work. But the truth is, they're doing exactly what needs to be done. They're not just saying, we have a model of disability life that's good for us, let's leave it there. No, they're taking it where it needs to go, where it's needed most. For people with disabilities in developing countries, really rural areas, who might never have heard that legally they're entitled to this or that protection, this can be an eye-opener. This can be a game-changer. It's where they realize for the very first time they are not just a burden to their family or on society. They realize they are a person of strength, character, and dignity, and they have the potential and the capability to contribute. And that is something we as a society must never underestimate. Truth is, there are times when we all get frustrated dealing with our own conditions. And whether we have a disability we've acknowledged or not, everyone has something that gets to them, causes stress or strain. But the understanding that there are support systems, no matter where you go in the world, that there will always be someone there to stand by you, that can make all the difference. For a person with a disability, the key is recognizing their own potential. And honestly, I would imagine that those who speak to DRPI about their experiences and their needs, they're not going to waste the opportunity. They're not going to sit there and say, oh, it's fine, everything's good, I have what I need. No. For them, this might be the first real opportunity to speak about what matters to them, to present the issues they face and say, I know you're in a position to help. Will you please be that someone who stands beside me? Presenting that information can make a difference for them, their own countries, and for us here at home, because we recognize more and more these people are just people, no matter where they come from, what background they are. Disability is universal. The fact is, no matter where you go, a person with a disability will have the same basic needs for support and understanding, but also they will have the same strengths, same character, same ability to achieve if we as a society or they as a society decide to take the time to provide meaningful, in-depth both analysis and support for these people. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. The truth is, disability research is a critical area for anybody in a position of power. This might be on the minds of the public more so now that we have political debates and elections coming up. It might occur to these politicians that individuals with disabilities should be foremost on their minds, that providing support, it's going to be key to them. But we should remember this at all times. We should remember individuals with disabilities are just part of this great tapestry we call life. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Brain injury is the leading killer and disabler of people under the age of 44 and kills more people under the age of 20 than any other causes combined. Texting or talking on a cell phone while operating a motorized vehicle can lead to serious car crashes, brain injuries, or death. Take the pledge and help put a stop to distracted driving. Go to idontpledge.com to make a pledge to drive only. Never text. Everyone deserves to travel on our roads and communities without the fear of a distracted driver.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jose Vieira from Disability Rights Promotion International's Argentina office. He was telling us a little bit about a new disabilities model they're hoping to make a universal one. For the second half of our show, you're going to hear a couple of location pieces. First off, we'll hear from Joanna Zine. She'll be sharing a great story about the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation's promotions work in relation to their upcoming Gutsy Walk.
Wells here with...
Hi, my name's Joanna Zine.
And you've been providing information about the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation.
Yes, we're here today at St. Clair College, the volunteer fair, to talk about Crohn's and colitis and our upcoming Gutsy Walk on June 5th.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the event itself?
Well, the event on June 5th is basically a big family barbecue. We invite out people from all over the community, friends and family mostly, but now we're trying to get more into corporate sponsorships so that we can grow our awareness, raise more money, and get the resources we need to find a cure. Right now, there isn't a cure for Crohn's and colitis or irritable bowel disease, and that's something that affects one in 150 Canadians today. Crohn's and colitis is the most prevalent in Canada right now, all over the world, and that's a huge concern for us. So we want to figure out why it's happening to our people and what we can do about it to make sure that people find cures.
So how does the condition typically affect a person?
It's one of those icky diseases that if you grew up with it, you don't want to talk about it. It affects your stomach, your intestines, your bowels, and can cause a lot of stomach issues and stomach pain. In short, what you see is blood.
So, in terms of the upcoming event, do you foresee any challenges in organizing it?
I've already had plenty of challenges, but I'm not too worried about it. Every challenge can be overcome. And challenges are what drive me and what push me to make Crohn's and colitis become an even bigger and better event in the long run.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
We've had some events leading up to the Gutsy Walk. We've had a corporate breakfast, and we had a pretty good turnout for that. About 10 people showed up from different corporations across Windsor, so we had some local support and we're continuing to grow that. There were more businesses that couldn't make it out to that event but reached out to us after the fact and said they were really excited about joining in, so I can see that we're going to be growing a lot. Our education night had 60 people come out, and that was a huge success for us as well. Any type of awareness we can get is fantastic because there's so many people that need support. And today at the volunteer fair, we've only been here for 45 minutes and we've already raised $60 in donations. So that is out of this world for me. I can't believe how grateful I am for the people of St. Clair College and their generosity.
So that speaks pretty well to how the campus community is responding to the need for awareness.
Students are always a great resource to rely on. They're really caring, passionate people, and they're obviously in school for a reason. And I'm really grateful for everyone that showed us support.
So, what are the next immediate steps in terms of awareness?
I'm going to continue emailing and calling people and reaching out to local businesses. I'm going to reach out to the student population and our core volunteers and give them the energy and passion that I have, share that with them so that they feel passionate and energized to go out and fundraise and raise awareness for us. And at the end of the day, no matter what happens on June 5th, whether we have 2 people or 200 people come out, I'm going to be so proud of everything that we've done together and we've accomplished for the society.
So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for greater awareness, what would you say?
Don't be shy. This is something that we're not comfortable with talking about, and that's exactly why we should. Do the things that you're scared of doing so that in the future you don't have to face those fears anymore.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you so much, Cam, and I really appreciated being interviewed for your radio.
Of course.
Sounds like a great event they've lined up. What I love about the idea of the Gutsy Walk is how it's making a public statement, how these individuals affected with Crohn's and colitis are simply out there saying, this is one part of who I am, but it's not going to hinder me from doing the things I love to do. It's not going to be the all-determining factor. And making a public event, making a public statement in regards to this, can really dispel the myths. Why is it we as a society assume we know what a condition would mean? we haven't experienced it firsthand. Truth is, medical science can tell you a condition means this or that, but human strength, human capability, plays a part too. And for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, this really is a wonderful thing they've put together for those impacted with the condition. And for members of the community who want to broaden their horizons, broaden their understanding, they can come out to this event and really, they can just take in an amazing event, enjoy a day with new friends, family, and see some great, great demonstrations of what it means to really live with a disability, but to live in strength, dignity. Next up, we're going to hear another location piece. In this case, we're going to hear from a young woman from St. Clair College's Community Integration through Cooperative Education Program. She'll be sharing a little bit about her educational experiences with a disability. This is Cam Wells here with
Carly Rock.
She's going to be telling us today a little bit about her own story of disability life.
Yes.
So what's the story?
I had epilepsy since I was 10 months old. All that I pretty much had is since I was born, but I wasn't officially diagnosed until I was almost one.
And how did the diagnosis impact you growing up?
When I was little, it didn't really affect me because I didn't fully understand the situation. So when my seizures came back when I was like 16, it really started to hit me that I was someone with special needs.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the supports you've received?
I am blessed to have an amazing family who loves me no matter what. And I was blessed to have at least a few good friends who are understanding about all my situation.
So, were there any challenges you faced with things like education?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because of my disability, I was delayed as a child educational-wise.
So, to look at the converse side of things, what was the greatest success you experienced despite your condition?
Pretty much that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I know that's a cliche, but it really does mean a lot. I've been through so much.
And what are the next steps for you in your education and your work going forward?
I hopefully want to work with children with disability. It's because who else are these kids going to learn from than someone who has been in their shoes maybe once or twice before? Yeah, so I'm pretty sure I will understand their situation a whole lot better.
So, if you could send any one message to the community about the need for disability inclusion, what would you say?
Pretty much we're just like every other kid with our own challenges and struggles, and be aware of that. Don't bully, don't discriminate based on the person's looks or disabilities or educational worth.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. Carly had it exactly right. Friends, family, those who will stand beside you are truly one of the greatest blessings you can hope to find. For a person with a disability, comes with the realization that you're not alone, that you're not facing a situation hopelessly. The only way to be a person with a disability and to be hopeless is to give up on yourself, to give up on support systems, to say that there is no hope, to say that no one cares, when the truth is, people always do. Carly, she's had some difficulty growing up, but achieving, coming to a place where she's getting an education and even wanting to pass that along to the next generation of young people with disabilities. That's an amazing thing. Truth is, people with disabilities can speak to the needs of their fellows much better than just an outside cold medical model can. This is where I love what you might call the recent shift in the education system. The past couple of decades, we've seen a lot more work being done to provide for individuals with disabilities and special needs, recognizing their potential, finding a way to reach them rather than shuffling them off to the next teacher and saying, here, this is your problem. It should never be a problem. It should be a matter of innovation. Just taking the time, taking the care to really recognize the value and the strength of a person with a disability. And I maintain, no matter what the condition is, there is always a way to reach them. Carly is a fine example of this. She's an example of a young person who's just living in strength, dignity, composure. She's a great student. She's working alongside her fellow students with disabilities. I've seen this social structure in action, folks. It's a community. It's people who spend time together not because they have to, because they want to. And in so doing, they learn each other's strengths, they learn their capabilities. And, well, from that, you get the real sense they're playing off each other's abilities, that working together, they can create an educational environment that says not only to the community, but the instructors as well, these are strong, intelligent, capable people. And if their potentials are realized and their needs are met, they can achieve anything. The potential of the future, folks, is impossible to gauge. But I know this much. We must never shortchange ourselves in the education system when it comes to people with disabilities. We must never say that there is no potential and no hope for any of them. But the fact is, we cannot know what a person will achieve until we put the right instrument in their hand, teach them the way that they need to learn. It's not simply a matter of shortchanging them as a student. It is a matter of recognizing that the future will need understanding, will need open minds. It's programs like CICE that are saying to these students, yes, you do have potential. Maybe you learn in a different way. That's fine. We'll come up with something that can reach you on that level and in that way. The fact is, there's no greater gift that you can offer a person with a disability than recognizing equality. There's nothing that'll put a smile on their face faster than saying, I know you have potential. I know you will achieve. And you will do something great, not despite your condition, but because you are a human being with the potential and the creativity. And if you're very lucky, like Carly, the drive to succeed. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.